Welcome back to This Green Earth, the weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us in studio for the second half is Lauren Loki and Dave Swartz. They are both affiliated with Sage Mountain.
Yes.
We'll start there, right?
Right.
And we'll talk a little bit about what Sage Mountain does and your mission and goals with that organization. But we wanted to start with an event that you kind of helped sponsor last week called a vegan challenge.
Yes.
So give us some what that was about and maybe some results of it.
Okay. So we've had these a few times in the year, and it's just a way for people to try this lifestyle out, a vegan lifestyle out, whether it's for 7 days or for 10 days or for a month. And our hope is that obviously these people that have tried it will continue on with it and stay vegan. So the one we did last week pertained to the mayor of Park City, Andy Bierman, and his wife, Thea. And we had approached them a while back asking if they would like to try this 10-day vegan challenge. And they were open to it. And finally, last week, we were able to present a few of these issues pertaining to our food choices, and Andy had agreed to do this challenge as well as Thea and a few other people in the city. So we had about probably 10 people, I would say 10 people to do this challenge, and it ended up being a 7-day challenge, which is still just great. And I think 25 or 30 other people signed up to maybe do it sometime in the future.
Right.
And so what it entails is a bunch of recipes. It really does open your eyes to just an abundance of food. I think that some people, when they hear vegan or even vegetarian, they think that they're not going to get the nutrients they need and the food, or just eating lettuce or something. But
sure,
with all these, you know, alternatives out there now and just the abundance of colorful foods, it's really an easy, it's really simple. And so we showed a film also during that week called Cowspiracy, which I really recommend people to see that. Another one is What the Health, which pertains more to the health issues of meat, dairy, eggs, and fish. And so and we did a potluck, and so it's just a way to kind of build this community, and it's been great so far, and it sounds like Andy is on board as well as Thea and many others, and so we're hoping this continues on.
So I was just going to ask, what kind of resources do you prepare people with as they go into this challenge?
Right.
Because from somebody that is not a vegan, but doesn't eat much meat, I think the biggest barrier to me is like, okay, I got to like figure out the right recipes and have all these things prepared so that I don't end up just, you know, eating avocados all week, right?
Right, right. Yeah, so I think that's the concern for a lot of people, which is understandable, because you really do have to change, you know, even your grocery store route.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But I think the more that, you know, once you try it, and one thing that Kent does with the challenges sometimes that we weren't
and
able
Kent
to do it.
Is
Kent Maurer, he's a one single act, and he's been really great. He kind of is the leader of these challenges that we have. So he takes people to the grocery store, which is really helpful to kind of run through, okay, here's what you buy. Here are these simple recipes that, and you don't have to think too much about it either. Like, I think it can be overwhelming at first, but once you find out that there's so many foods out there, like beans, nuts, seeds, all these different vegetables and fruits, grains, potatoes, it really does open your eyes to so many foods. So good resources out there. There's tons of recipe books. There's, you know, going vegan on a budget, like what, you know, you can get out of the grocery store with spending $40. It's actually not more expensive. And then, like I said, Kent is just a local, you know, advocate, obviously, that he can show you, you know, all these different ways of buying food. And do you want to add to that, Dave?
Well, I can just add, you know, why we started the vegan challenge. And that was due to the environmental benefits you get from eating a whole food plant-based diet. And with a city that prides itself on being green and being progressive in that way, there are, you know, just a few statistics here. You know, water, which is a huge issue in Utah.
Right. We were just talking a little bit about that in the last segment. Go ahead.
Yeah, that, you know, 85% of all water in Utah, all freshwater resources, goes to agriculture, and the majority of that animal agriculture. So, and with 4 to 5% going to residential use, and people saying, you know, you can take less showers, you can water your lawn less frequently. If you stop taking showers, if you stop flushing the toilet, if you stopped watering your lawn, it's still going to be a massive issue. And no one wants you to stop taking showers.
Or flushing the toilet.
That's so
very good.
Just an example that, you know, switching to a whole food plant-based diet could save 219,000 gallons a year. That's
per
huge.
Person.
Per person.
Okay.
Per person.
Yeah, I saw real quick. I saw that it takes 1,000 gallons of water to produce 1 gallon of milk.
Yeah,
and that's gallons of water that the cow or so is consuming in the process of manufacturing milk, producing
right,
milk.
Right, they're drinking water, but also they're in the food that they're eating. And if you think about cows,
that's right.
They're like any mammal, you need more calories when you're producing milk and nursing your baby or whatever. Not that they're hooked up to these machines, but it takes more calories, so
right.
You have to eat more, you have to drink more.
So direct and indirect use of water to produce dairy products like that, whether it's milk, butter, cheese. A lot of water,
and a lot of this has to do with the inefficiencies of you have to feed an animal 9 calories to get 1 calorie back.
Okay.
Which that conversion rate, that's the reason why this is so inefficient to eat animals, whether it's for protein, for food, for anything.
So I'm sorry, again, though, I tried the challenge. And as an example, one of mine is milk. I like milk, but I don't drink a lot of it. It's just literally in my coffee. Mm-hmm. So I try soy-based milk or cashew-based milk. There are all forms of different alternative types of plant-based milk, right? Mm-hmm. I tried that. Yeah, you know what? My coffee tastes different. So we talked about that. I think that you have to reset your taste buds in some ways to acclimate to a different flavor, a different taste of coffee. Still got my caffeine delivery, which is most critical, and my sugar delivery, and that. But those are some of the challenges I had trying to get accustomed to different flavors, different in this case. That type of milk, right?
Right.
And so that's some people have to overcome.
Yeah. So it does. It takes, I think I read it's like 30 to 40 days for your taste buds to really kind of shift over. And it is, for me too, Chris, when I became vegan, I think 8 years ago now. I've been vegetarian since I was 11. But, and the last thing to go for me was cream in my coffee. That was the very
last
thing.
That was
last
the last,
thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And
good.
I just
I
couldn't
feel
get over
about
it. I'm like,
that.
Okay, all I'm going to have
a tablespoon
is
a day.
I know. And finally, I started seeing all these different alternatives, and I tried it. And at first, I was like, meh, not really. But I just kept going with it, and I found one I liked.
Okay.
And it actually, for me, what did is it's like, okay, it's not, for me, having cream in my coffee is not worth, the suffering of these animals and the devastation that's happening, with our resources. And I decided, hey, I can get over this. And then I really started enjoying the taste. And it's been great. So I understand that challenge, but it takes a little time, and you just have to say, okay, well, what's worth,
you're right.
This?
What's the value to the planet as a whole?
I want to hear from Dave about like your experience. How long have you been vegan?
Let's see. This was back in 1999.
Okay.
And I originally got into it simply for the animal issue. I was shown a pamphlet of how meat was produced. And that took about 5 minutes for me to say, okay, well, I guess I'm done with that.
Yeah.
And I better figure it out. Now, things were different in 1999. You didn't have the varieties. I think there was soy milk. I don't even know if almond milk was on the scene really back then.
Right.
And Whole Foods, a grocery store like that didn't really exist.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 20 years now, and I was a dairy minimalist.
Okay.
For a while, because I didn't, I did it strictly for the animal reasons, and I didn't realize what environmental impacts my diet was having. Or health impacts. That's another issue that it's not talked about too much. But so 20 years, being meatless vegetarian and the last 8 years vegan.
Wow.
Okay. And I actually, where do I see Dave and Lauren? At the gym. Yeah. We're always working out. We're healthy. We're fit. I've stopped eating meat. This is pretty much since the beginning of this year, you know, except for occasional events or something. I don't prepare it for myself. So I've just cut that out, and a lot of fish too. And I'd like to say there's a lot of components that go into my overall health, but I'd like to say that taking meat off my plate has helped me physically.
That's awesome.
And so I'm an advocate for that.
One of the things I think that we do hear, so I'm glad you brought this up, is like, oh, well, you can't be vegan if you're an athlete. And
right.
Let's talk about that a little bit, you know, getting the nutrients that you need as a vegan.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a myth. You know, there is people worry about protein. And so, you know, I would tell them, you know, where do you get your protein from is the big question. And, you know, you have athletes, you have strength athletes, strong men. You have the only weightlifter in the USA to qualify for the Olympics, vegan. NFL players. Tom Brady, who's playing into his 40s.
Right.
Primarily plant-based. You have elite runners, the most decorated ultra runner in the world, Scott Jurek, vegan. You have, I mean, from NHL players to many basketball players, they're vegan. You know, and another thing, you know, I would say, why you can ask the 400-pound gorilla of where he gets his protein from, you know, as he pounds you into the ground, and, you know, all protein is derived in plants. So it's just when you eat it from an animal, it's just filtered through an animal. So, yeah, you can get your protein, you can be fit, you know, and there's so many examples out there, and more athletes are going that way.
Right. The trend is towards that. It's not such a stigma anymore. Mm-hmm. The awareness and the knowledge is much greater that, okay, I can cut meat out of my diet and I can perform just as well, if not better.
And you recover. The recovery is faster. You're not getting that inflammation in your joints. I do recommend, I mean, well, just personally, I've noticed, you know, obviously you still have injuries every once in a while. Like I have, you know, my shoulders are injured right now from overuse, but I feel better than I've ever felt as I'm getting older. And I can run. I recover so much quicker. I can hike up mountains and not feel, my day is not, I feel like before, I've been vegetarian since I was 11, so I can't really equate it to anything, but even when I was eating dairy, like, I feel like I had these lulls during the day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really get that anymore. And it's pretty amazing. I do recommend The Game Changers is a film that came out this last year, and I think it's coming out in theaters across the U.S. here in, the fall, I believe. Yeah. And I recommend everyone see that film. It really is. It's all about athletes that are vegan, and a lot of them are doing it because of the animals and realizing, wow, this is a benefit on my health too and on the planet. So it's pretty cool.
We're speaking with Lauren Loki and Dave Swartz with Sage Mountain, and I want to. Like I said, we got a few more minutes, and I want to talk a little bit about Sage Mountain. But you, speaking of films, you produced a little video of a trip you took back this spring. Yeah. It's available on YouTube, right?
Not yet.
Oh,
so,
okay.
But we did do a movie ad, actually, that is in some of the theaters here, for a 45-second ad for our See Yourself and Me campaign. I think I told you about that.
Yeah.
But yes, in March, Amy Meyer from Utah Animal Rights Coalition and myself, we went on a tour of Utah's farms. We took about 4 days. And just to kind of see, we stayed all on public roads just to get, some education about, you know, farms in Utah. And there's hundreds of farms here in Utah, and they're really hidden. You know, they're in places like San Pete and Utah County, Cache County. We did this tour and got some good pictures and footage of these farms, in particular dairy farms. There's over 200 dairy farms just in Utah. and the conditions that these animals are living in are horrid. But not just that, but the waste we saw firsthand, you know, just in rivers and lakes, the feed, the amount of feed that we saw just stacked high in sheds, piles upon piles of feed. And you just think about, like, why are we, you know, here's this feed that going to animals that we don't need to be consuming. In the meantime, we're losing water, we're having, you know, waste going into our, you know, runoff going into our oceans, causing these dead zones.
Right. You're talking about the ponds, the waste ponds where that water trickles down, can work down into the groundwater.
Right.
It's untreated and such. Yeah. These are large industrial-sized farms.
Yes, but not also small farms.
Really?
Small farms. I mean, the worst conditions we actually saw as far as dairy were on these smaller farms. I mean, I think that's important to note that, you know, whether it's a small farm or a large farm, you know, people need to know that the truth, that this is what's happening, you know, right here in our backyard, you know, in terms of waste, water, the conditions, you know, these animals are living in. It's just important for the public to know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so this video will be available?
Yeah, we're working on it.
Okay.
Amy and I are kind of working on putting something together. Definitely photos will be on our website at some point. And, you know, kind of description and blogs about our experience.
All right. And last few minutes, Sage Mountain. What's happening at Sage Mountain these days?
So Sage Mountain, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We have a small sanctuary out in Browns Canyon, which is about 63 acres. Right now we have 2 pigs, 3 sheep, and a steer, all which were rescued from the food industry. They'll get to live their lives out there. And we plan on having maybe 10 animals at the most, not including birds. But these animals serve as the ambassadors for this larger message, which is, hey, you know, here's a lifestyle that we can all adopt and not only help these animals, but we can also better, you know, the planet and our health. And so we do a lot of outreach in terms of, you know, talking in schools, hosting films, having people come out to the sanctuary, meet the animals. We do what's called the Cube of Truth on Main Street once a month, which shows, you know, the conditions of these animals to raise awareness of how deeply entrenched these animals are in our food system. And what else? We have 10-day challenges with the help of Kent Maurer. What else do we do?
Well, there's a lot of outreach, you know, in dealing with the environmental causes and reasons to go plant-based. The outreach, you know, you can say, we try to teach people that you could say no to the leading cause of greenhouse gas emissions in the world. You could say no to the leading cause of ocean dead zones, the leading cause of deforestation. The heaviest use of water, freshwater resources. You can make an impact. You can do something about this. And it happens to be the healthiest diet for humans. And you don't have to contribute to the cruelty of 9 billion animals that are slaughtered every year just in the United States.
Right.
And I think another thing, too, is that, you know, I just read the study this morning that 7.6 billion people represent 0.01% of all living things, but we have caused the loss of 83% of all wild animals.
You're stealing my news.
Oh, sorry.
That's hilarious.
I mean, it's...
No, keep going with it. We have the thing.
Yeah, it's
all right.
While livestock grows in leaps and bounds. I mean, there's 60% of all mammals on Earth are livestock, mostly cattle and pigs.
Right.
36% are humans, and just 4% are wild animals. So if you care about wildlife, this is the way we have to, you know, we have to consider these issues. I mean, it's pretty urgent at this point.
All right.
Yeah.
Where do people, website for Sage Mountain?
Yeah, website is sagemtn.org.
And if people are interested in taking the 10-day vegan challenge, is there information on the website about that as well?
Yes, there is information there. You can also go to Kent's website, which is onesingleact.org.
Perfect.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, Lauren Loki and Dave Swartz from Sage Mountain, thanks so much for joining us and sharing that information. And like one single act. And it started with meat and just cutting out meat and then chicken and then turkey and then there's, you know, fish, and it just worked from there.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no downside to it. No, it's downside. All upside.
It's a win-win for everyone.
Okay. Thanks again for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Yes,
thanks.
All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll go cover that news item on Ryan Zinke in the Department of Interior. And yes, some additional details on what Lauren was talking about. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by the generosity of our Broadcasters Club. KPCW would like to thank Broadcaster Club members Beth and Roger Armstrong, Paul Askins and Joni Campbell, and Joe and Marie Baker. Thank you for helping KPCW keep fresh tracks on the radio all season long.
Hi, I'm Julie Hopkins at Keller Williams Real Estate. I share KPCW's pride in our community, and so I love supporting the Daily Lost and Found Report on KPCW and their coverage of Park City's fantastic nonprofits. For real estate, it's jhparkcity.com, and for Lost and Found, it's KPCW every day.
Hi, it's Eileen Mullane, co-owner of Right at Home. We support our local community and have been supporting our community radio station, KPCW, for 17 years. Right at Home offers a selection of furniture, home accessories, and gifts. Consigned and new items arrive every day. You'll never know what you'll find. 1745 Bonanza Drive, 658-2111, or rightathomedesigns.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues. We've got some time for a couple of news items at least.
Yeah.
Let's dig in to the one you have now, regarding the Department of Interior and some recent decisions they made.
Yeah, you know, this press release just caught my eye this morning from the Department of the Interior. It came out yesterday afternoon. And the headline here is that Secretary Zinke is proposing expansion of hunting and fishing opportunities at 30 of America's national wildlife refuges.
That's the operative word, National Wildlife Refuge. Okay.
Okay, yep. Okay. So with that in mind, he announced a proposal yesterday to open more than 248,000 acres to new or expanded hunting and fishing opportunities at 30 national wildlife refuges. So that's everything from migratory birds to deer to big game.
Right.
And in the press release here, it actually kind of will, at the bottom, give a summary of kind of what the recommendations are in each state, so state by state. So they're proposing here in Utah to expand existing migratory game bird and upland game hunting in the Bear River Migratory Bird Refuge.
Wow.
And I'm kind of like laughing here, and I think it's because I'm shocked. The Bear River Migratory Bird Refuge is this like world-renowned place for the migratory species that come through, including some really rare ones. And, you know, I don't know what those details exactly are yet as far as which migratory game birds they're looking at. But
this is all...
It's close to
proposal.
Home, and then in most states there is some aspect. So
that, like you say, it's birds, it's deer, it's other upland species. Now, there is hunting allowed in national wildlife refuges.
Yes.
This is an expansion of it.
Correct.
So
this says if this proposal is finalized, it would bring the number of units of the National Wildlife Refuge System where the public can hunt to 377, and the number where fishing would be permitted to 312. So it's, you know, it's a significant change.
Right.
And then I just so the changes would be implemented in time for the upcoming 2018-2019 hunting season.
Wow.
So relatively quickly as well.
But is it going through a review process? This is just an announcement.
This will be posted.
Yeah.
I just want to share one quote before I get to those details. This is from Rob Bishop here in Utah. Mm-hmm. He says public lands should be for the public to enjoy. I think we can all agree with that. The Department of the Interior's latest decision to expand acreage and access for hunting and fishing on wildlife refuges was the right move. Secretary Zinke's decision will help our economy grow and enable those who hunt and fish to spend more time catching game and less time caught in red tape.
Oh, okay. But if you're a duck.
Got quite a bit of support from our local legislators as well.
Right. So, again, not such a refuge. And so now if you're there bird watching, you might have to share your bird watching adventure with a duck hunter. Share the same blind.
Right, who's shooting the bird that you're trying to watch.
Okay.
So let's see. I wanted to give information on the comment period. So
okay.
The service will seek comments from the public on the proposed rule for 30 days, beginning with publication in the Federal Register in the coming days. It's not up there yet. The notice will be available at regulations.gov, which is where they always post these things.
Yes.
And then there's a long docket number, which you can look up online.
But it's a great place to go to mm-hmm. post your comments because it goes directly to the Department of Interior.
And given that comments that were submitted indirectly in some of these past situations, they were discarded, you always want to leave your comments directly with the Federal Register. And there's an interim copy of the proposed rule that's online as well through the Fish and Wildlife Service. So that's fws.gov.
All right. Good story. Interesting.
It keeps coming.
Yeah.
Fast and furious.
Keeps coming. Okay. You know what? Let's keep going. We got another 3 minutes. I've got this one story. Hey, April. April 2018 was the planet's third warmest April since record-keeping began in 1880. Okay.
Right.
This
Part
is according
to this point.
NOAA's National Center for Environmental Information, who tracks all this information. What were the two previous warmest Aprils? Anyone?
Last year and the year before.
Oh, very good, Nell.
Oh, thank you.
Did you read the article? Or you
yeah,
just,
I've been just lucky guess.
That seems to be the trend. So the last three warmest Aprils were the last 3 years. The areas... the planet's area where temps were below normal were in the eastern half of North America. Because we had, back east, roughly, they had a very unusually cold April. Now, it seemed to be the big news issue. Will winter ever end? Well, it end. Yeah, well, maybe not in that small percentage of the planet. The rest of the planet was well above average, third warmest April on record. Arctic sea ice, we always track that too, during the April 2018 was the second lowest in the 40-year satellite record keeping history, behind the record set in April 2017. So there's a trend too, and that's according to the National Snow and Ice Data Center out of Colorado. The most dramatic lack of ice extent was across the Bering Sea, which experienced major loss in February and never fully recovered. Ice extent across the Bering Sea in April was less than half of its previous record.
Wow.
So the record was set in 1989. This time they broke by almost double, less than half. So the Bering Sea, along with the large portions of the Arctic Ocean, are melting and will continue to melt. This is the melt season.